My name is Mary Olson with Nuclear Information and Resource Service, and I'm online with Ian Fairley, who is right now in London, England. Ian, welcome.
Welcome to you too, Mary. Nice to speak to you.
I'm here in the frame of the fourth anniversary of Fukushima, and my first question to you is, do you think we should still be worried about Fukushima today?
We were cut off. You'll have to ask the question again. I didn't hear what you said.
Okay. Do you think we should still be worried about Fukushima today?
Oh, yes. Very much so. The accident is still unfolding as we speak. Here we are almost 4 years after the disaster. And it's never ending. It keeps on going. For a start, there are, every day there are hundreds of thousands of gallons of contaminated water seeping into the Pacific Ocean. In addition to that, there three of the reactors, 1, 2, and 3, have melted down at Fukushima Daiichi. And so that means we have a situation whereby we've got about 100 tons of melted nuclear fuel sitting in the basements of the destroyed reactors. And we really haven't got a handle at all on the condition, on what they're doing, what might happen in the future. All we know is that they're still extremely hot. And the reason why, of course, is because of radioactive decay. You know, we've got huge quantities of radioactive cesium, strontium, and other fission products, and they give off a lot of heat, and they will continue to ensure that the fuel will remain molten for quite a long time, for at least another 10, 15 years or so. So we should be worried about it, and we have to keep really vigilant as to the condition of the fuel, the molten fuel, at those three reactors. And as I said also, the contaminated water, which is flushing through the site into the Pacific Ocean.
Ian, what are the main health consequences of Fukushima?
Yes, I know. The thing is that we've been through this before with Chernobyl in 1986. Which contaminated huge tracts of Europe, all of Europe, and also the plume went around the world as well. Now, there we found, first of all, you had the immediate aftermath of the radiation workers who actually went in to try and clean up. They got doses big time, and we are now seeing that they are coming down with leukemias and solid cancers. And the sequence goes as follows. Within a few years, you see leukemias popping up, particularly in young people. But you have to wait a little while for the figures of the numbers to mount up in order to be carrying out an epidemiological study. Secondly, after about 4 years, you see thyroid cancers beginning to appear. 4 to 5 years or so, because there's a latency period of about that time for the cancer to appear. Then later than that, say, 10 years, going to 20, 30, 40 years, you see the solid cancers appearing. In other words, cancers of lung, cancers of the liver, cancers of the, in other words, non-blood cancers. Cancers of solid tissue. Now these cancers can appear 7 or 8 decades later. For example, at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, which occurred in 1945, there are still people dying of solid cancer as a result of the exposure to the sea back in 1945. 70 years ago. So it's a long-term problem.
How many people will get fatal cancer, do you think, over time?
Over a long period of time, absolutely.
Do you have a guess on how many from Fukushima?
Yes. What you can do is you can actually estimate the collective dose to the people of Japan from the exposures that they've received from Fukushima. And I've done that myself, and also UNSCE, the United Nations Scientific Committee Evaluating Atomic Radiation. You can actually estimate what the collective doses are of the population. And from that, you can make a stab at estimating the number of people who will die. And funny enough, both UNSCE and myself, we estimate about 5,000 people over the years will die from fatal cancers.
And was Fukushima as bad as Chernobyl?
Not really. When you compare Fukushima with Chernobyl, you have to take into account the following. That with Chernobyl, the reactor burned for 8 days afterwards. 8 days in which radionuclides were thrown up into the atmosphere continuously, 24 hours a day for 8 days. Now that didn't happen at Fukushima. At Fukushima there were four explosions, two of which were caught on video and two of which weren't. And they did send up radioactive debris and clouds and radionuclides into the atmosphere. But they were four one-offs. Whereas with Chernobyl, as I say, it was 24 hours a day. And if you look at the source term, which is scientific jargon for the amount of radioactivity sent out into the atmosphere from Fukushima, and compare that with Chernobyl, Chernobyl was roughly speaking about a factor of 10 times larger. So, and there's another difference too. With Japan, 80% of the radioactivity that was released here was deposited on the ocean, not on land. Whereas with Chernobyl, it was all on land because it's in the middle of a continent and there's no oceans nearby. So for that reason, the consequences of Chernobyl were greater. There's one other fact. People point to the fact that Chernobyl is greater. However, the population density in Japan was greater than the rural areas round about Chernobyl. So if you take all of those factors into account, Chernobyl is still about, roughly speaking, 10 times greater, particularly when you look at the cesium and strontium isotopes.
So do you see an element of luck at Fukushima?
Well, yes. Yeah. The prevailing weather patterns on the 11th, 12th, and 13th, 14th of March 2011 were mostly to sea and not to land. So Japan got a huge stroke of good luck. I mean, I'm really, really, really glad that happened. It meant that the video nuclides were deposited, as I say, out to sea and not on land. I'm not saying that there was none on land. Roughly speaking, as I say, 80% to sea and 20% over the areas near Fukushima and Tokyo.
Ian, I'm going to add one more question. Given the amount of radioactivity still at the Daiichi site, do you think we're out of the woods in terms of another major release if some other catastrophic, event were to occur?
Oh, it's hard to say, Mary. Put it this way, the fault line running up the east coast of Japan is still there, and it's small tremors all the time. about two or three in the Richter scale, there's no way that we could say for sure that there will not be another major earthquake. And if that happens, well, it could devastate Japan yet again.
We just don't know.
We just don't know. I mean, what we can say is it was of an indescribable folly and hubris for the scientists in Japan and politicians in Japan to build so many nuclear power stations in a country straddling major fault lines and the tectonic plates of the Earth. Just absolutely, the only word I can think of is stupid.
Well, we could put a little bit at the feet of General Electric in this case too, huh?
A little bit. I'd like to add something. Yesterday, I went to a meeting in England, or in Wales actually, which was addressed by the former Prime Minister of Japan, Naoto Kan. And he called for the abandonment of all nuclear power stations. All nuclear power stations to be closed down, and no further stations to be built. Well, this was a powerful call, and an appeal to sanity in my view. And he was warmly applauded for that call.
Thank you for sharing that. It is inspiring. Mm. Now, Ian, we're going to wrap this up. I want to thank you so much for sharing your views. And would you please state your website?
Oh, yes. I should have introduced myself. I am sorry.
It's okay.
I'm an independent consultant, as you pointed out, in London, England. I have degrees in radiation biology and chemistry, and I studied my doctoral studies at Imperial College here in London and Princeton in the States were on the health effects of various nuclear waste strategies. I acted as a consultant for the UK government for about 10 years or so, and the last thing I did for the UK government was to be the scientific secretary of a big ministerial committee looking into the internal radionuclides. In other words, radionuclides that you get inside you from inhalation or from ingestion. And that was published in 2004, and you can get it by going to www.cherry, which is spelled CERRIE.org. My own website is www.ianfairley, all one word, and I'll spell that, .org. IANFAIRLIE.org.
And I want to endorse ianfairley.org because I use it regularly for all the different resources you've posted there, as well as the contributions you've made, which are enormous. So thank you so much, Ian.
My pleasure, Mary.
I'm going to stop recording.